From Montreal, Quebec, this is the Bard Brawl.
He's like, what? What are you guys all fighting about?
Welcome, Bard Brawlers, to the Bard Brawl.
Bienvenue.
Merci. The two languages are A, to encourage the bilingualism that is developing within the city of Montreal, and to accommodate the Bill 101 requirement that half of our signage has to be in French and bigger. Which doesn't make any sense if you're speaking it, but also because we are talking about Henry VI, Part 1, and it involves half a French cast.
And my name is, would have all spoken French.
My name is Daniel J. Rowe, and the one who just added the little tidbit is my co-host, Mr. Eric Jean, the master of French and English Renaissance. How are you?
I'm well.
Can you say that in French, please?
Ça va bien.
Oui. Ouais. It's good to have you here. Are you excited that hockey has once again...
I'm conflicted. I'm happy there's hockey, because I love hockey, but I kind of feel like they don't deserve to have us care about it now that they're back.
They're like the king who has abandoned you and doesn't deserve you.
I know myself and where my loyalties lie, and I know that when the game is on... I'm still gonna
I'll be watching like this with one arm across my gut and the other one in my mouth, my finger in my mouth, chewing it and swearing. That's how I watch sports.
That's how you used to watch it before the lockout.
Yeah, before, way back when. Also, to eye with me, across my gaze, is Jay Reed, our social media manager. Jay Reed. Master of social media.
Master of social media, that's great.
I gave you the ring. I made it myself. I soldered it and welded it and beat it with the anvil.
This is my first social media job. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
Given the salary we're paying you, you better
appreciate it. He's got the ring of power. That's all that he needs, the ring of social media power. I saw on TV once, I don't know, I didn't ever watch it, but... there was a social media awards at like some sports social media awards. Can you imagine a worse place to be than the social media awards? Because every single person would be looking at their phone the whole time. As you're giving a speech, you're guaranteed to have everyone tweeting about it.
In fact, they don't want to hear your speech. They want to read your tweet of it after.
Yeah. Your speech could just be a tweet.
That'd be crazy.
Mr. Andre Simoneau.
Hi.
We're recording this before you have left us and went to India or Nepal and China. So how is Nepal and China?
It's a place of the future.
The place of the future.
I would say.
How time flies and travels. Stephanie E.M. Coleman sitting on the end making paper or thinking about making paper.
Horrible, horrible, horrible medium.
Stephanie E.M. Coleman will be the one designing Barbell t-shirts, which will be available shortly on our website. Other things available on our website are plays recorded. Eric Jean's descriptions and thoughts on each act of every play that we do, plus sonnets, plus film reviews. I've written one, Jay's written one, Andre's written one. Eric will... right one. I gave him the worst play. And Laura McDonald has also written one. Mickey Lavelle's written one. No, Laura's written two. All very good. If you have any Shakespeare film that you have watched and you would like to write a review of and like to contribute to, you can email us at bardbrawl@gmail.com. And we'll see if you've got the goods. We are in Act 4 of Henry VI, Part 1, or 1 Henry VI, as the hashtag is that we've been using.
Because Shakespeare's original hashtag.
Now we're on Twitter, as Shakespeare intended, if he even existed. Never gets old. Act 4, Scene 1, we are in Paris. Can you explain, Eric Jean, why we are in Paris, where we are, what is going on?
After the fighting in Orleans and Rouen, the British have managed to take back some of their losses.
And which British?
Oh, sorry, the English.
No, which is, who's the general?
Oh, Talbot.
John Talbot.
Yes. No, John Talbot's his son. No. Also.
Shoot. Talbot, who I'm reading.
The Talbot. 2000.
That's the important
part. Yeah, the important part is I'm reading.
All right, let's start over. So Talbot,
yes,
with his forces, have managed to retake some of the losses that English had taken in France. And in the wake of these successes, Gloucester convinces Henry VI to basically go show his face in France and legitimize, basically have himself crowned King of France in order to cement his rule and hopefully inspire the French people to fall in line behind him and stop supporting Charles' campaign to retake France for the French.
Henry VI, the dramatis personae, or character description, if we're speaking English, his main concern is France. He seems to not get anything except that he wants France back because Henry V is the one who had conquered France, and this is his sole... It's the only thing he really seems to... Everything else, he just wants to be quiet. Why does he want... What is it that he wants peaceful? That was a nice segue.
He wants...
I threw that to him.
Thanks.
Very nice.
He basically... There are a lot of unrest, I guess. The different factions of nobles who want to take advantage of the fact that he's a child and an effectual king in order to claim power for themselves. But he naively thinks that because he had them sort of pinky swear in front of him that they wouldn't fight, that everyone was sincere and that everything is good at home. So he's willfully or not clueless as to what's going on, and he just is going to France because that's, like you said, more important to him than whatever's going on at home.
And this play, like we've mentioned before, has reignited the War of the Roses, which we saw in Act 2 and in Act 3. There's these factions forming between the Lancasters. The Lancasters are the White Rose?
Oh, man, I keep forgetting. No, the Lancasters are the Red Rose.
Lancasters are the Red Rose, and the Yorks are the White Rose. So go to barbrawl.com and leave a comment. Which rose are you?
And if you get confused, you can check out the War of the Roses video game. They've got nice physical representations of dudes with white roses. And...
In this play, I am a red rose because I'm reading Somerset, but I will not swear fealty to them until I've seen every one of you listeners' comments as to which rose I should be. That's not going to happen. Last time, we had Eric Jean taking his role as King Henry VI, and then I got 1,000 phone calls and a lot of emails with video and photos from Jay Reed as to why he wasn't king, because I had sworn to him that he would be able to read the king in all plays from here ad infinitum. You were very upset about not getting the king.
I was very, very upset about it. And now that I got this pretty much lame duck king, I'm regretting my decision.
Yeah. I read the character description of him earlier, and it was less than flattering. King Henry VI as David Starkey in his monarchy documentary, which I watched in preparation for this, was a pacifist king who just wanted everyone to get along. So
they
he also doesn't
the
show
best
up.
Leaders.
Yeah, he make good leaders.
He's the Jimmy Carter of the War of the Roses.
Right. He starts to get better as Henry VI Part 3. He has some decent lines, but always is a little bit lame. So, anyway, that'll be Jerry today. Also, the reason he's king is because Eric Jean has been reading Gloucester, who talks to the king an awful lot. Winchester has been Mr. Andre Simoneau, who represents sort of the church versus the state.
Kind of.
Although not...
Winchester's kind of a lone wolf, in a sense. He's not really affiliated with the York or the Lancastrian camp. He's kind of out for himself. But yeah, I guess the church and state is really the...
He's a hard one to peg because in the end of the first act, or one of the scenes in the first act, he actually says a little soliloquy, where am I going to fit in here? And we never really find out where he fits in, because he sort of, he fights with Gloucester, definitely. Yeah. And then it's...
But he wants the king dead. Like, that's kind of the suggestion, that he wants to find a way to get the king eliminated.
Yeah, so but...
Or rather, have the... Initially, it's hold the king ransom, so he can sort of leverage that to get Gloucester to back off and get himself in this position. But anyway.
So make England more like France, according to this play. Make England more of a church... affiliated state, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing.
It's a very complicated play with lots of characters. So, King is Jay Reed. Gloucester is Eric Jean. Winchester, this is Act 4, Scene 1, by the way. Winchester is Andre Simoneau, as stated. You are also York.
Yeah.
You have changed from Richard Plantagenet, who is Richard III's father, to just being the Duke of York. One of the problems with these plays is when a character assumes a title, their name becomes that title. Suffolk.
But he's the same character?
Yeah, same person.
So he's just different.
Okay. Yeah.
Different name.
Just got that.
Suffolk is Stephanie. I think you were Suffolk last time, right?
Uh-huh.
I will be Somerset. Suffolk, by the way, becomes important later. Little preview there. I was Somerset, who is the head of the Lancastrian side of the War of the Roses.
Mm-hmm.
Warwick has also been Jay Reed. Talbot was me, governor of Paris. I don't even think a lot of these people say anything, but they're all in this act. Exeter, Falstaff, Vernon, Bassett.
Two of those are mine.
Bassett was you.
And Falstaff.
And Falstaff was... was you.
Yeah. If Vernon and Exeter say anything in this scene, I'll...
And Vernon was Stephanie.
Oh, you're Vernon? Okay, so I'll jump in for Exeter.
If readers change, please bear with us. There's a lot of characters in this play, and there are only five of us because we lost Laura Pellicer. Yeah.
Thankfully, the characters the readers change, for the most part, are kind of interchangeable. They're not super important.
And a lot of characters die.
Yes.
We've had three death scenes. Who will be next? Let's find out.
Can identify the characters by their facial hair. In a lot of cases, mustaches, beards... Yeah.
Sideburns, that's whiskers. Helpful,
yeah. For listeners at home.
Goatees. Everybody's got their text open. Enter King, Gloucester, Winchester, York, Suffolk, Somerset, Warwick, Talbot, and Governor of Paris, Exeter, and others.
Lord Bishop, set the crown upon his head.
God save King Henry, of that name the sixth.
Now, Governor of Paris, take your oath.
Governor kneels.
That you elect no other king but him. Esteem none friends but such as are his friends, and none your foes but such as shall pretend malicious practices against his state. This shall ye do, so help your righteous God.
Exeunt governor and train. Enter Falstaff.
My gracious sovereign, as I rode from Calais to haste unto your coronation, a letter was delivered to my hands. Writ to your grace from the Duke of Burgundy.
Presents it, Talbot. Shame to the Duke of Burgundy and thee, I vowed base knight, when I did meet thee next, to tear the garter from thy craven's leg, plucking it off, which I have done, because unworthily thou wast installed in that high degree. Pardon me, Prince Henry and the rest, this dastard at the Battle of Poitiers, when, but in all, I was 6,000 strong, and that the French were almost 10-1 before we met, or that stroke was given like a trusty squire did run away, in which assault we lost 1,200 men, myself and divers gentlemen beside, were there surprised and taken prisoners. Then judge, great lords, if I have done amiss, or whether that such cowards ought to wear this ornament of knighthood. Yea or no?
To say the truth, this fact was infamous and ill-beseeming any common man, much more a knight, a captain, and a leader.
When first this order was ordained, my lords, knights of the garter were of noble birth, valiant and virtuous, full of haughty courage, such as were grown to credit by the wars, not fearing death nor shrinking for distress, but always resolute in most extremes. He, then, that is not furnished in this sort, doth but usurp the sacred name of knight, profaning this most honorable order, and should, if I were worthy to be judged, be quite degraded, like a hedge-born swain that doth presume to boast of gentle blood.
Stain to thy countrymen, thou hearest thy doom. Be packing, therefore, thou that wast a knight. Henceforth we banish thee on pain of death.
Exit Falstaff. And if you want to read my last review of Richard III by Laurence Olivier, a lot of actors get knighted these days.
Yeah.
To all of those British people out there, if you want to be a knight, just do Shakespeare plays and they make you a knight. So we've come pretty far when you get banished. Sorry. King Henry, continue.
And now, Lord Protector, view the letter sent from our uncle, Duke of Burgundy.
What means his grace, but he hath changed his style. No more but plain and blunty to the king. He forgot he is his sovereign, or doth his churlish superscription pretend some alteration in goodwill? What's here?
Reads.
I have upon a special cause moved with compassion of my country's rack, together with the pitiful complaints of such as your oppressors feed upon, forsaken your pernicious faction, and joined with Charles, the rightful king of France. O monstrous treachery! Can this be so? That in alliance, amity, and oaths there should be found such false dissembling guile?
What? Doth my uncle Burgundy revolt?
He doth, my lord, and is become your foe.
Is that the worst this letter doth contain?
It is the worst and all, my lord, he writes.
Why, then, Lord Talbot, there shall talk with him and give him chastisement for this abuse. How say you, my lord, are you not content?
Content, my liege? Yes. But that I am prevented, I should have begged I might have been employed.
Then gather strength and march unto him straight. Let him perceive how ill we brook his treason, and what offense it is to flout his friends.
I go, my lord, in heart awesome. Desiring still you may behold confusion of your foes. Exit. You want to check that out? In Act 3, Burgundy gets convinced by Joan of Arc.
That he's really French.
That he's really French. Enter Vernon and Bassett.
Grant me the combat, gracious sovereign.
And me, my lord, grant me the combat too.
This is my servant. Hear him, noble prince.
And this is mine, sweet Henry. Favor him.
Be patient, lords, and give them the leave to speak. Say, gentlemen, what makes you thus... thus exclaim, and wherefore crave you combat, or with whom?
With him, my lord, for he hath done me wrong.
Yes, you're Bassett, Eric.
All right. And I with him, for he hath done me wrong.
What? Is that wrong whereof you both complain? First let me know, and then I'll answer you.
Crossing the seas from England into France, this fellow here, with envious, carping tongue, upbraided me about the rose I wear, saying the sanguine color of the leaves did represent my master's blushing cheeks. When stubbornly he did repugn the truth about a certain question in law argued betwixt the Duke of York and him, while other vile and ignominious terms, in confrontation of which rude reproach, and in defense of my lord's worthiness, I crave the benefit of law of arms.
And that is my petition, noble lord, for though he seem with forged quaint conceit to set a gloss upon his bold intent, yet know, my lord, I was provoked by him, and he first took exceptions at this badge, pronouncing that the paleness of this flower bewrayed the faintness of my master's heart.
Will not this malice, Somerset, be left?
Your private grudge, my lord of York, will out, though ne'er so cunningly you smother it.
Good lord, what madness rules in brain-sick men, when for so slight and frivolous a cause such fat, facetious emulation shall arise? Good cousins both of York and Somerset, quiet yourselves, I pray, and be at peace.
Let this dissension first be tried by fight, and then your highness shall command a peace.
The quarrel toucheth none but us alone. Betwixt ourselves let us decide it then.
There is my pledge. Accept it, Somerset.
Now I let it rest where it began at first.
Confirm it so, mine honorable lord, as Gloucester. Confirm it so. Confound be your strife, and perish ye with your audacious prate. Presumptuous vassals, are you not ashamed with this immodest, clamorous outrage to trouble and disturb the king and us? And you, my lords, methink you do not well to bear with such perverse objections, much less to take occasions from their mouths to rise a mutiny betwixt yourselves. Let me persuade you, take a better course.
It grieves his highness. Good, my lords, be friends.
Come hither, you that would be combatants. Henceforth I charge you, as you love our favor, quite to forget this quarrel and the cause. And you, my lords, remember where we are. In France, amongst a fickle and wavering nation, if they perceive dissension in our looks. And that within ourselves we disagree. How will their grudging stomachs be provoked to willful disobedience and rebel? Beside, what infamy will... Beside, what infamy will there arise when foreign princes shall be certified that for a toy, a thing of no regard, King Henry's peers and chief nobility destroyed themselves and lost the realm of France. Oh, think upon the conquest of my father, my tender years, and let us not forego that for a trifle and was brought with blood, let me be umpire in this doubtful strife. I see no reason if I wear this rose.
Putting on a red rose.
That anyone should therefore be suspicious. I, more inclined to Somerset than York, both are my kinsmen, and I love them both. As well, they may upbraid me with my crown, because, forsooth, the King of Scots is crowned. But your discretions better can persuade than I am able to instruct or teach. And therefore, as we hither came in peace, so let us continue peace and love. Cousin of York, we institute your grace to be our regent in these parts of France. And good, my lord of Somerset, unite your troops of horsemen with his bands of foot, and like true subjects, sons of your progenitors, go cheerfully together and digest your angry caller on your enemies, ourself, my lord protector, and the rest, after some respite, will return to Calais, from thence to England, and where I hope ere long to be presented by your victories with Charles, Alençon, and that traitorous rout.
Flourish. Exeunt, Mana, York, Warwick, Exeter, and Vernon.
My lord of York, I promise you the king prettily, methought, did play the order.
And so he did, but yet I like it not, in that he wears the badge of Somerset.
Tush, that was but his fancy. Blame him not. I dare presume, sweet prince, he thought no harm.
And if I wished he did, but let it rest. Other affairs must now be managed.
Exeunt, Manette, Exeter.
Well, didst thou, Richard, to suppress thy voice? For had the passions of thy heart burst out, I fear we should have seen deciphered there more rancorous spite, more furious raging boils than yet can be imagined or supposed. But howsoe'er, no simple man that sees this jarring discord of nobility, this shouldering of each other in the court, this factious bandying of their favorites, but that it does presage some ill event. 'Tis much when scepters are in children's hands, but more when envy breeds unkind division. There comes the ruin. There begins confusion.
Exit. That's a second speech by Exeter, the like sort of...
Well, he's like the conspirator, I think. He's clearly in on something from York, because he seems to know York's secret Mortimer connection to Richard II.
Yeah.
But, I'm just, as we're reading through it now, I'm kind of realizing Shakespeare in this play is actually doing a pretty good job of with the tension, because we all know that the shit's going to hit the fans and that this is going to split everyone down the roads. And we're starting Act 4, and no one's, like, it hasn't really broken out yet.
Well, France is still there as the real enemy, and that's why Henry VI, thank you, Jay, for that.
Was it good?
It was good, yeah, but it was awesome. His one thing is, and he's right, he's right in that you guys have let France go because you're fighting amongst yourself, and that's kind of, I guess, France should belong to France and not to England, but that's another whole other question for the...
But the English kings are basically French kings, and so
yeah,
it was...
French conquered England in the first place.
I want what he has.
Yeah. So now we are in France before Bordeaux. Talbot, do you want to do the stage directions for this one?
Sure.
As I am Talbot.
All right. So France before Bordeaux. Talbot's trumpeter and general entered Talbot with trump and drum before Bordeaux.
Go to the gates of Bordeaux, trumpeter. Summon their general unto the wall.
Trumpet sounds. Enter general and other aloft.
English, John Talbot, captains, calls you forth. Servant in arms to Henry, King of England. And thus he would. Open your city gates. Be humble to us. Call my sovereign yours, and do him homage as obedient subjects. and I'll withdraw me and my bloody power. But if you frown upon this proffered peace, you'll tempt the fury of my three attendants, lean famine, quartering steel, and climbing fire, who in a moment, even with the earth, shall lay your stately and air-braving towers if you forsake the offer of their love. General, somebody.
Thou ominous and fearful owl of death, our nation's terror and their bloody scourge, the period of thy tyranny approacheth. On us thou canst not enter but by death, for I protest we are well fortified and strong enough to issue out and fight. Thou retire, the Dauphin, well appointed, stands with the snares of war to tangle thee. On either hand thee there are squadrons pitched to wall thee from the liberty of flight. In no way canst thou turn thee for redress, but death does front thee with apparent spoil, and pale destruction meet thee in the face. 10,000 French have taken the sacrament to rive the dangerous artillery upon no Christian soul but English Talbot. Lo, there thou standeth, a breathing valiant man of an invincible unconquered spirit. This is the latest glory of thy praise that I, thy enemy, do thee withal. For ere the glass that now begins to run finish the process of his sandy hour, the eyes that see thee now well colored shall see thee withered, bloody, pale, and dead.
Drums afar off.
Hark! Hark! The Dauphin's drum, a warning bell, sings heavy music to thy timorous soul, and mine shall ring thy dire departure out.
Exit with others above. He fables not. I hear the enemy. Out! Some light horsemen and pursue their wings. Oh, negligent and heedless discipline! How are we parked and bounded in a pale, a little herd of England's timorous deer, mazed with a yelping kennel of French curs? If we be English deer, be then in blood, not rascal-like to fall down with a pinch, but rather moody, mad, and desperate stags. Turn on the bloody hounds with heads of steel, and make the cowards stand aloof at bay. Sell every man his life as dear as mine, and they shall find dear of us. My friends, God and St. George, Talbot and England's right, prosper our colors in this dangerous fight.
This, I think, is one of the few well-known speeches from this play.
Yeah. It's true.
Like, that's all.
Not a lot of memorable speeches or characters in this play. Which
even
is weird.
The memorable ones tend to be fairly straightforward. There's not all that much to say about it.
A lot of dying speeches.
Yeah, and patriotic speeches.
Yeah, that is a good one. Now we're still in France. Plains of Gascony. Enter a messenger that meets York. Enter York with trumpet and many soldiers.
Sir William Lucy.
And up the speedy Scots returned again and dogged the mighty army of the Dauphin.
They are returned, my lord, and give it out that he has marched to Bordeaux with his power to fight with Talbot. As he marched along by your spiles were discovered two mightier troops than the Dauphin led, which joined with him and made their march for Bordeaux.
A plague upon the villain Somerset. But thus delays my promised supply of horsemen that were levied for this siege. Renowned Talbot doth expect my aid, and I am louted by a traitor villain cannot help the noble chevalier. God comfort him in this necessity. If he miscarry, farewell wars in France.
Enter another messenger, Sir William Lucy.
Thou princely leader of our English strength, never so needful on the earth of France, spur to the rescue of the noble Talbot, who now is girdled with a waist of iron and hemmed about with grim destruction. To Bordeaux, warlike Duke, to Bordeaux, York, else farewell, Talbot, France and England's honor.
Oh, God, that Somerset, who in proud heart did stop my cornets, were in Talbot's place. So should we save a valiant gentleman by forfeiting a traitor and a coward. Mad ire and wrathful fury makes me weep, but thus we die while remiss traitors sleep.
Oh, send some succor to the distressed lord.
He dies, we lose. I break my warlike word. We mourn, France smiles. We lose, they daily get. All long of this vile traitor Somerset.
Then God take mercy on brave Talbot's soul, and on his son young John, who 2 hours since I met in travel toward his warlike father. This 7 years did not tell that see his son, and now they meet where both their lives are done.
Alas, what joy shall noble Talbot have to bid his young son welcome to his grave? Away! Vexation almost stops my breath that sundered friends greet in the hour of death. Lucy, farewell! No more my fortune can, but curse the cause I cannot aid the man. Maine, Blois, Poitiers, and Tours are won away, long all of Somerset and his delay.
Exit with the soldiers.
Thus, while the vulture of sedition feeds in the bosom of such great commanders, sleeping neglection doth betray to loss the conquest of our scarce cold conqueror, that ever-living man of memory, Henry V. Whilst they each other cross, lives, honors, lands, and all hurry to loss.
Stephanie, you've got a lot of the...
Keep having all these concluding speeches.
Concluding speeches. Oh, now we have the other side of it. France, other plains in Gascony. Enter Somerset with his army, a captain of Talbot's with him. It is too late. I cannot send them now. This expedition was by York and Talbot, too rashly plotted. All our general force might, with a sally of their very town, be buckled with. The overdaring Talbot hath sullied all his gloss of former honor by this unheedful, desperate, wild adventure. York set him on to fight and die in shame. That Talbot dead, great York might bear the name.
Here is Sir William Lucy, who with me set from our overmatched forces forth from aid.
How now, Sir William? Whither were you sent?
Whither, my lord? From bought and sold Lord Talbot, who, ringed about with bold adversity, cries out for noble York and Somerset to beat assailing death from his weak regions. And whiles the honorable captain there drops bloody sweat from his war-wearied limbs, and in advantage lingering looks for rescue, you, his false hopes, the trust of England's honor, keep off aloof with worthless emulation. Let not your private discord keep away the levied succors that should lend him aid, while he, renowned noble gentleman, yield up his life unto a world of odds. Orleans the Bastard, Charles, Burgundy, Alençon, Rainier, compass him about, and Talbot perisheth by your default.
York set him on. York should have sent him aid.
And York is fast upon your grace, exclaims, swearing that you withhold his levied host, collected for this expedition.
York lies. He might have sent and had the horse. I owe him little duty and less love, and take foul scorn to fawn on him by sending.
The fraud of England, not the force of France, hath now entrapped the noble-minded Talbot. Never to England shall he bear his life, but dies betrayed to fortune by your strife.
Come, go, I will dispatch the horsemen straight. Within 6 hours they will be at his aid.
Too late comes rescue. He is ta'en or slain, for fly he could not, if he would have fled, and fly would Talbot never though he might.
If he be dead, brave Talbot, then adieu.
His fame lives in the world, his shame in you.
Exant. Dun, dun, dun. English camp near Bordeaux. Talbot and his son John. Who would like to be his son John? Would you like to be his son John? Oh, young John Talbot, I did send for thee to tutor thee in stratagems of war, that Talbot's name might be in thee revived. When sapless age and weak, unable limb should bring thy father to his drooping chair, but oh, malignant and ill-boding stars, now thou art come unto a feast of death, terrible and unavoided danger. Therefore, dear boy, mount on my swiftest horse, and I'll direct thee how thou shalt escape by sudden flight. Come, dally not, be gone.
Is my name Talbot, and am I your son? And shall I fly? Oh, if you love my mother, dishonor not her honorable name to make a bastard and a slave of me. The world will say he is not Talbot's blood, that basely fled when noble Talbot stood.
Fly to revenge my death if I be slain.
He that flies so will ne'er return again.
If we both stay, we both are sure to die.
Then let me stay, and father, do you fly. Your loss is great, so your regard should be. My worth unknown, no loss is known in me. Upon my death the French can little boast, in yours they will, in you all hopes are lost. Flight cannot stain the honor you have won, but mine it will, that no exploit have done. You fled for vantage, everyone will swear, but if I bow, they'll say it was for fear. There is no hope that ever I will stay if the first hour I shrink and run away. Here on my knee I beg mortality rather than life preserved with infamy.
Shall all thy mother's hopes lie in one tomb?
Aye, rather than I'll shame my mother's womb.
Upon my blessing I command thee, go!
To fight I will, but not to fly the foe.
Part of thy father may be saved in thee.
No part of him but will be shame in me.
Thou never hadst renown, nor canst not lose it.
Yes, your renowned name, shall flight abuse it?
Thy father's charge shall clear thee from that stain.
You cannot witness for me being slain. If death be so apparent, then both fly.
And leave my followers here to fight and die? My age was never tainted with such shame.
And shall my youth be guilty of such blame? No more can I be severed from your side than can yourself in twain divide. Stay, go, do what you will, the like do I, for live I will not if my father die.
Then here I take my leave of thee, fair son, born to eclipse thy life this afternoon. Come, side by side together live and die, and soul with soul from France to heaven fly.
Oh, how touching.
It's nice.
You're gonna...
Field of battle. Oh, let's continue. I don't see why this is two scenes. Alarm. Excursions wherein Talbot's son John is hemmed about and Talbot rescues him. St. George in victory, fight, soldiers, fight! The regent hath with Talbot broke his word and left us to the rage of France's sword. Where's John Talbot? Pause and take thy breath. I gave thee life and rescued thee from death.
Oh, twice my father, twice am I thy son. The life thou gavest me first was lost and done, till with thy warlike sword, despite of late, to my determined time thou gavest new date.
When from the Dauphin's crest thou sword struck fire, it warmed thy father's heart with proud desire of bold fat-faced victory, then leaden age quickened with youthful spleen and warlike rage. Beat down Alençon, Orléans, Burgundy, and from the pride of Gallia rescued thee. The ireful bastard of Orleans that drew blood from thee, my boy, and had the maidenhood of thy first fight, I soon encountered. And interchanging blows, I quickly shed some of his bastard blood, and in disgrace bespoke him thus. Contaminated base and misbegotten blood I spill of thine, mean and right poor for that pure blood of mine, which thou didst force from Talbot, my brave boy. Here, purposing the bastard to destroy, came in strong rescue. Speak thy father's care. Art thou not weary, John? How dost thou fare? Wilt thou yet leave the battle boy and fly? Now thou art sealed, the son of chivalry. Fly to revenge my death when I am dead. The help of one stands me in little stead. Oh, too much folly is it, well, I wot, to hazard all our lives in one small boat. If I today die not with Frenchman's rage, tomorrow I shall die with mickle age. By me they nothing gain, and if I stay, 'tis but the shortening of my life one day. In thee thy mother dies, our household's name, my death's revenge, thy youth and England's fame. All these and more we hazard by thy stay, and these are saved if thou wilt fly away.
The sword of Orléans hath not made me smart. These words of yours draw lifeblood from my heart. On that advantage, bought with such a shame, to save a paltry life and slay bright flame, before young Talbot from old Talbot fly, the coward horse that bears me fail and die. And like me to the peasant boys of France, to be shame, scorn, and subject of mischance. Surely by all the glory you have won, and if I fly, I am not Talbot's son. Then talk no more of flight. It is no boot. If son to Talbot, die at Talbot's foot.
Then follow thou that thy desperate sire of Crete, thou Icarus, thy life to me is sweet. If thou wilt fight, fight by thy father's side, and commendable proved, let's die in pride. Sure, it's kind of sad.
Yep.
Everybody's just leaving him because of their own petty crap. And the two warriors are just resolved to die for a bunch of
honor
and a bunch of bickering nobles. Another part of the battlefield. Do you want to take the stage directions here?
I shall.
You probably should.
So, Talbot's servant, soldiers, John Talbot, Charles, Alençon, Burgundy, bastard, Hussein, Lord Lucy, and Herald of the French. Alarms! Excursions. Enter old Talbot, led by his servant.
Where is my other life? Mine own is gone. Oh, where is young Talbot? Where is valiant John? Triumphant death, smeared with captivity. Young Talbot's valor makes me smile at thee. When he perceived me shrink, and on my knee his bloody sword he brandished over me, and like a hungry lion did commence rough deeds of rage and stern impatience. But when my angry guard and stood alone, tendering my ruin and assailed of none, dizzy-eyed fury and great rage of heart suddenly made him from my side to start into the clustering battle of the French, and in that sea of blood my boy did drench his overmounting spirit, and there died my Icarus, my bosom, in his pride.
Enter soldiers with John Talbot born.
Oh, my dear lord, lo, where your son is born.
That antic death, which laughs us here to scorn, anon from thy insulting tyranny, coupled in bonds of perpetuity, two Talbots winged through the lither sky, in thy desperate shall escape mortality. O thou whose wounds become hard-favored death, speak to thy father ere thou yield thy breath. Brave death, by speaking where he will or no, imagine him a Frenchman and thy foe. Poor boy, he smiles, methinks, as who should say, had death been French, then death had died today. Come, come, and lay him in his father's arms. My spirit can no longer bear these harms. Soldiers, adieu. I have what I would have. Now my old arms are young Talbot's grave.
Dies. Enter Charles. I'm sorry. Enter Charles and Anson, Burgundy, Bastard, and Pucelle with forces. Had York and Somerset brought rescue in, we should have found a bloody day of this.
How the young whelp of Talbot's raging wood did flesh his puny sword in Frenchman's blood.
Once I encountered him, and thus I said, thou maiden youth, be vanquished by a maid. But with a proud, majestical, high scorn, he answered thus, young Talbot was not born to be the pillage of a giglet wench. So rushing in the bowels of the French, he left me proudly, as unworthy fight.
Doubtless he would have made a noble knight. See where he lies inhearsed in the arms of the most bloody nurser of his harms. Someone else be the bastard.
Hew them in pieces. Hack their bones asunder. Whose life was England's glory, Gallia's wonder?
Oh no, forbear, for that which we have fled during the life, let us not wrong it dead.
Enter Lucy, attendant, herald of the French proceeding.
Herald, conduct me to the dolphin's tent, to know who hath obtained the glory of the day.
On what submissive message art thou sent?
Submission, dolphin, 'tis a mere French word. We English warriors wot not what that means. I come to know what prisoners thou hast taken, and to survey the bodies of the dead.
Prisoners, ask thou? Hail our prisoners, but tell me whom thou seekst.
But where's the great Alcides of the field? Valiant Lord Talbot, Earl of Shrewsbury, created for his rare success in arms, great Earl of Washford, Waterford, and Valence, Lord Talbot of Goodrig and Urchinfield, Lord Strange of Blackmere, Lord Verdun of Alton, Lord Cromwell of Wingfield, Lord Furnival of Sheffield, the thrice victorious Lord of Falconbridge, Knight of the Noble Order of St. George, worthy St. Michael in the Golden Fleece, great Marshal to Henry the VI of all his wars within the realm of France.
Here is a silly stately style indeed. The Turk, the 52 kingdoms hath, writes not so tedious a style as this. Him that thou magnifiest with all these titles, stinking and fly-blown, lies here at our feet.
Is Talbot slain? Frenchman's only scourge, your kingdom's terror and black nemesis. Oh, were mine eyeballs into bullets turned, that I in rage might shoot them at your faces.
Nice.
Oh, that I could but call these dead to life, if it were enough to fright the realm of France. Were but his picture left amongst you here, it would amaze the proudest of you all. Give me their bodies, that I may bear them hence and give them burial as beseems their worth.
I think this upstart is old Talbot's ghost. He speaks with such a proud, commanding spirit. For God's sake, let him have them. To keep them here, they would but stink and putrefy the air.
Go, take their bodies hence.
I'll bear them hence. But from their ashes shall be reared a phoenix that shall make all France afeard.
So we be rid of them. Do with them what thou wilt. And now to Paris in this conquering vein. All will be ours now, bloody Talbot slain.
Exit. That's sad.
Yeah, it's kind of a Talbot's got
crappy death.
Yeah. It's sort of...
Oops.
It's not my fault, it's your fault. It's not my fault, it's your fault.
And then he just winds up getting... Yeah. It's like, they're both going to be dead. Guys,
seriously.
Guys, seriously. Both of you go and help him. And it's kind of... Henry VI is sort of right when he's like, yeah, could bullshit. You two stop fighting and go help Talbot?
That was his one sort of not far off the mark leadership speech, right? Where he actually sort of says, like, okay, if we show a divided front now in front of the French, we're going to guarantee that they're going to rebel and they're going to win. Like, we have to at least, you know, play nice, be nice, and we'll figure this out later. But right now, like,
and the
diplomatic mission.
And I think the way Jay read it is perfect because no one's listening to him. They're like, whatever, we'll go, and they have their troops. They're sitting there. They won't do it because the other ones that
Somerset's too proud to send them without being asked, and York is too proud to ask.
And then Talbot and his son wind up dead. So the answer to the trivia question was who winds up dead in this act is Talbot and his son.
Talbot.
It's probably the saddest of the death because he was bemoaning the death in the previous acts. Not Mortimer, but the Salisbury and was it Bedford?
Bedford
that died, and Talbot was mourning them, and now he's dead. And I guess
his son, who's like, I have come to fight in the wars with you, father. You should probably leave now, son. No, I will not besmirch your noble name. Okay, let's do this.
So again. It's not a play that's done very often, but one that, for all the reasons, kind of should be.
Father son scene in
who
there,
doesn't like seeing a father and son get killed in the same act? They don't actually.
One gets killed off screen.
Yeah, one gets killed and then brought on in front.
Although
of his
the nice thing about being able to like staging something like this is there's a lot of the fighting that takes place off stage. That you could totally bring to the screen if you're going to make like a movie with it. You can totally turn it into an action movie where people take the field and Lord of the Rings style, like huge armies fight each other. And like,
there is a lot of fighting in this.
It's like, oh, we take it back. It's just kind of like the shifting this border somewhat back and forth, and everyone's kind of getting all prissy with each other.
And not to plug our own little project here, but when you go through it act by act, you kind of see how interesting it can be.
Yeah,
and there are parts that maybe detract, and one of the we've mentioned before,
but,
like too many characters and too many storylines. But all of these things can be sort of manipulated and kind of shaved down to make it be a lot more of a complete single.
Even the good plays, the ones that everyone acknowledges being great. They have their moments of, you know, WTF. They have their moment of what's going on here. Why is this here? And stuff that never makes it into the movies because it's just easier to get rid of than explain or have to leave it as is.
Like, yeah, I think when we read Coriolanus, for example, one of like, we all loved it. And then there was those parts near the end, you're like, what? What is this scene all about? Like, it's sort of, and they've been cut out of most of the productions of them. Because they don't really, they're not really good.
They take
fine.
Away from the dramatic tension of the whole thing, or the action of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like that scene in Star Wars when Greedo misses, or Han, Greedo
Han
misses and
first.
Sean.
Han shot first.
You don't need that, just take it out. Although he added it after he had already produced it, so... Everybody's happy. I thank you for joining us for this fourth act of Henry VI Part 1. You can feel free to leave comments on our Facebook or our bardbrawl.com page, or you can email us at bardbrawl@gmail.com, tweet at us at thebardbrawl, and
donate or send us your money making schemes.
Donate.
We want some recording equipment.
Soon to come merch. You may have seen posters. We have posters. Soon we will have t-shirts. Next, we may have buttons.
We may even have pictures of all of us wearing our t-shirts.
Pictures. Oh, nice.
Like a signed team poster.
Little meta, little meta bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to the Barbell Twitter feed to hear up-to-date info of up-and-coming events, because there will be there's an art show coming up. There will be other things that will occur throughout the year, which you can find there. So for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 brawlers plus my cat curled up. Aww.
Looks so comfy. I've just been staring at it.
Yeah. She looks very cute. I think I might go and do likewise. Thank you. See you next time.
Sonnet 22. My glass shall not persuade me I am old, so long as youth and thou are of one date. But when in thee time's furrows I behold, then look I death my days should expiate. For all that beauty that doth cover thee is but the seemly raiment of my heart, which in thy breast doth live, as thine in me. How can I, then, be elder than thou art? Oh, therefore, love, be of thyself so wary as I, not for myself, but for thee will, bearing thy heart, which I will keep so chary as tender nurse her babe from faring ill. Presume not on thy heart when mine is slain. Thou gavest me thine, not to give back again.